I called the sermon Paul's Wish because he says, I wish that all were as I myself am. And we learn that Paul is single himself. So this section, I feel like, highlights singleness, but yet in the end also talks about marriage and the need for it. It's America, we all know, is changing, and I think the whole world, as a matter of fact. But a Pew poll from several years back here says we hit a point where 50% of American adults now are single. They're not married. They were divorced, they're widowed, or they never got married at all. And that is a change from the past. Marriage was very high on everybody's list. But another thing that has changed, and there's several things that feed into this. Divorce rates are high, so that creates more single people. Baby boomers. I'm kind of on the bottom end of that, but there's a bunch of us. And as people are dying off, we have widows and widowers who are now part of the single community. And there's a lot of those. But then another thing's happened is marriage. And it is delayed more and more. The average now for a first marriage is 30 years old for both men and women, which is kind of surprising. I mean, I got out of high school and I went to college a year and we got married. So I didn't mess around with that. But I think there's more the thought that it's better to wait a little longer. And but we're not really studying that today. Those are just some major moves that create a situation there where there's a lot of people who are single at this point. The Paul, was he single? He doesn't really, here he says he is, but we don't know his circumstance. And there's people who grab at little things, and I did read this one thing, and I thought, well, I don't know. Maybe he is or was married at some point. Acts 26, verses 9 to 11. I myself was convinced that I ought to do many things in opposing the name of Jesus of Nazareth. And I did so in Jerusalem. I not only locked up many of the saints in prison after receiving authority from the chief priests, but when they were put to death, I cast my vote against them, and I punished them often in all synagogues and tried to make them blaspheme. And in raging fury against them, I persecuted them even to foreign cities. We all knew this about Paul. He was persecuting when on the road to Damascus, Christ came to him and converted him. But there's an interesting little thing there, if you noticed it. When they were put to death, I cast my vote against them. We think that may mean that he was a part of the Sanhedrin, and if he was, he would have been married. That was a requirement. The Jews put high priority on marriage. I've read different things that at different times, like when they first got back from the exile, the marrying age may have been as low as 14, and they wanted their people to be married to boost their population. And then probably in this time period of Paul, by 18, 20 at the latest, they would have expected you to have been married. And there were many arranged marriages at that time. So Paul likely had been married and sadly was probably a widower. And we don't know that as a fact, but we know that as speculation. So he tells us, though, here, I wish that all were as I am, but each has his own gift from God, one of one kind and one of another. Two kinds of gifts. I think he's talking about the gift of singleness and the gift of marriage. You don't hear many sermons on the gift of singleness. And there's a lot of people that would not like to have that gift. But I hope you change your mind as you hear about how Paul sees singleness. So first, this word gift that he uses is the Greek word charisma. It's a grace gift, if we were to translate that, is one way we could. This same word is used to describe the gifts like teaching, preaching, giving, mercy, prophecy that were given to believers. So each of us, as we're a believer, we know and we've been taught we get certain gifts. There are certain tests you can take that will supposedly help you identify your gift. But the gift that's not often talked about is the gift of singleness. And but it is a gift of God. He points out a couple things that aren't really covered. They're covered later in this chapter, but I'm going to bring them up so we can think about them. It may be better in times of distress or crisis or persecution to be single. We see that in verse 26. I think that in view of the present distress, it's good for a person to remain as he is. And in this case, if you were single, to remain single. I think the thought there is, there's been many a movie made about the good guy, and his only weakness is they go and grab his kids and his wife, and all of a sudden they can control the good guy. I can only imagine if you were a missionary and you take your family to a Muslim country, you know, if you have a wife and kids, that's a scary prospect. Now, God can protect you all, but you're still in a scary area. And so there is an advantage there, though, for the single person. A second thing, the married person has worldly troubles. He mentions that down in verse 28, if you're still in chapter 7. He has these worldly troubles that the single person does not have. Guess what? Sometimes it's a lot of work to earn enough money to buy the food, to feed the kids, to put a roof over the family's head, heads, and but there's all kinds of worldly cares involved with being married. I'm not downing being married; it's also a gift. But we know that there's work involved by the husband, by the wife, and there are a lot of worldly cares involved with being married that the single person doesn't necessarily have to deal with. The single person has more time to devote themselves to serving the Lord and pleasing the Lord, which is a wonderful thought. I know oftentimes pastors' wives, you hear that they feel like they're deserted because their husband's at church all the time. There's a problem that pastors need to make sure that everything isn't about the church all the time. It also has to involve his family and his children. Or there will be problems developed there. A verse that we often think of with serving and pleasing the Lord, which would apply for the single person as well as the married, is 2 Corinthians 5:9. So whether we are at home or away, we make it our aim to please Him. And some versions say our aim, they say our goal to please God. And we need to think of that in all times. And the single person can, at times, have more opportunity to please the Lord. Just a question as I get to the end of this little thing on singleness. Does it make a difference in your attitude to know that being single is a gift from God? I want to add one other thing in here, is that here in verse 8, he says, "To the unmarried and the widows, I say that it's good for them to remain single." We read unmarried, and in our American minds, we think that means everybody who isn't married, that doesn't have a wedding ring on, everybody is single. But to them at that time, Paul writing in Greek to us, in Greek there's a word for widows. In Greek there isn't a word for widowers. I don't know why that is, but it's just one of those things. So by saying the unmarried, he covers the widowers, as he says there at the end of the verse, "I say that it is good for them to remain single as I am." So this unmarried category would cover those who have been divorced, male or female, at any time in their life, if they're still single. It would cover those who are widows. It would cover those who are widowers. So it covers all those people. And as I said at the beginning, I feel like these general principles I'll talk about are going to cover everybody who's single. Actually, we're going to talk a lot about married people too. But especially, we want to think about those who are widows, widowers, and divorced at this time. And I think it makes a difference. I saw my dad go through it as my mom died many years back. It can be very, very difficult to have once had a married companion and then have lost them. And the loss is great in every way. So it'd be hard for him to have thought of it as a blessing or a gift from God. But that's what it is. That's what God tells us. So, secondly, I mentioned there's two gifts, the gift of singleness, the gift of marriage. I don't go into marriage as deeply because I think Pastor will cover it more later in the chapter. But I did put down some verses that I think of. If you wanted to look them up, Genesis 2:18-25. "It was not good for the man to be alone, so God created woman," and then marriage. I am sure that there's a lot of times where you could say it's not good for the woman to be alone either. So this goes both ways in that. Hebrews 13:4, "Marriage is honorable among all in the bed undefiled." Marriage is a good thing. It's wonderful. And for the people who have received it as a gift. Proverbs 18:22, "He who finds a wife finds a good thing and obtains favor from the Lord." This, again, is one of those verses that I think we can turn it around and say, she who finds a husband finds a good thing and obtains favor from the Lord. It's a blessing. It's a blessing too. It's a gift also to be married. As we go on from that, I've got several little categories where I put through lists. It's such a short section that I'm one of those guys that likes to make lists and think about, how do I handle this? So how do you know if you have the gift of singleness? Number one, you know because you are single. God put you there. It's a gift right now, even though you're wondering about it. Paul gave us a few hints here. You can control your lusts and desires. Well, that's good if you have the gift of singleness. You're not burning with passion, which he mentions there in that last verse. For it's better to marry than to burn with passion. Number three here, how do you know if you have the gift of singleness? God has not sent you someone to marry yet. Guess what? You may have and be convinced you have that gift of singleness. And at some point late in your life, up shows this man who wants to marry you or this woman who wants to marry you. And you say, wow, maybe I'm done with the gift of singleness. Maybe I have the gift of marriage. And so that's how you're going to know. Kind of by default. If you are single, well, yeah, you have that gift. How do we know if we should get married? Now, I mentioned a couple things there already, but if we are burning with passion all the time, it'd be best to be married. It would have been especially hard to live in Corinth. It was dominated by this temple to, I think it was Aphrodite, and to basically sexual perversion, and they had 1,000 prostitutes. Can you imagine? Up on a high hill in this temple, and at night they'd go out into the city to do those things that they would do. And it'd be hard to live a single life around that kind of stuff. But today, you'd have to say it's that way in Indiana, too. It's that way in Indianapolis. Immorality is so common and so accepted. It's on our TVs. It's on our phones, our magazines, on the street, in our families, on the street. It's so common if you drive down Washington Street towards Indianapolis to see prostitutes out there. Doing what prostitutes do. My brother lives just off, he's on Lowell, I think it is, and they've got a little kind of alleyway behind them, and sometimes the prostitutes bring the guys back in their alleyway and are trying to conduct business back there, and he'll call the police, or sometimes if he just goes and knocks on the window, they'll move on. But it's everywhere. It's in our families, computers, movies, ads, everywhere. So if you are that person that's burning with passion, you probably need to start looking for a husband or a wife. And now just some thoughts. About and warnings, really, thoughts and warnings. I had 5 of them here. If a couple decides to get married, they should do it pretty soon. I'm not a fan of 5-year engagements or 3-year engagements. You can do it. It's your life. You know yourself and your fiance best. I say get married. Go through some counseling with the pastors and get married. But to wait a long time opens the door for immorality of some sort. It's hard. Number two, it's hard to stay pure and avoid immorality. In our day, we've got lowered standards, free expression, constant suggestiveness. A thing I call, which kind of fits with the 5-year engagement, the fiancé trap. Sean and I had a lot of rentals and rented to a lot of just husband and wives or single people, and I don't know how many times we got introduced to the fiancé. And I was like, okay, well, that's nice. This person has a fiancé. And before I knew it, the fiancé was still the fiancé, but they were living with the person I'd rented to. And guys and girls, God doesn't really, He doesn't want you living together. He'd love you to live together and be married together. And you can talk to any of us pastors about having that marriage ceremony. Don't fall into that trap. Number three, it's really hard when a person has strong sexual desires and no immediate prospect for a spouse. It happens more often than we probably want to admit. Hang on. I do think that God is thinking of you, and if you recognize this as a gift, your singleness at this time, He's going to help you through it. And something I see here in our church, I don't know that it's just because of singleness, but is our single ladies, they stick together. I see them going out to eat a lot. They talk to each other. They encourage each other. Being single doesn't mean you can't have friends, and doesn't mean you can't encourage each other. And I love to see that. 2 Corinthians 6:14. It is not God's will for Christians to marry non-Christians. I know it happens, and sometimes it works out, and sometimes it doesn't. If at all possible, if you're questioning whether that potential husband or wife is a Christian or not, take your time. Don't rush into it. I think God will tell you over time whether they are or not. But God makes it pretty clear through 2 Corinthians 6:14, do not be unequally yoked with unbelievers, for what partnership has righteousness with lawlessness? Or what fellowship has light with darkness? So he makes it very clear, Paul does there. Don't get into those relationships. Now what happens to non-Christians get married and then one of them is saved? He doesn't say to get out of that. He says stay in it. Let's see what happens. Maybe that other person will come around to your side, to God's side. Number five here, don't just rush to marry the first Christian that comes along. I would love to say that every Christian would make a great mate for you, but sometimes not. You need the right person. When we're making decisions that should last our lifetime, let's make a good decision. So be careful, not careless. Things Christians wanting to get married should do. You're one of those. Yes, you're still single, but you'd love to get married. First of all, look for a person you can love, trust, and respect. Let marriage come as a response to a commitment of love. I know probably still a lot of the world has arranged marriages. Thankfully, you're free to marry who you want here, as far as I know. Look for that right person. Not every proposal for marriage is something off a Hallmark movie. But you can tell when that person is the kind of person you like, when you get along, when you truly love each other. Number two, it's okay to be on the lookout for the right person. Right? You're on the lookout. Oh, there's a single guy came in. There's a single woman. They're about my age. But it's even better to be the right person. Try to be the right person. If believers are right with God and it's His will for them to be married, He will send the right person at the right time. Count on it. Believe it. I think in the book of Ruth, we have one of those stories. Ruth and her mother, mother-in-law, they had both lost their husbands. And so they were both widows. And her mother-in-law, Naomi, had come from Israel. So she says, I'm going back to Israel. And Ruth says, you're not going without me. And as a matter of fact, I would rather die than separate from you. And your God will be my God. And she was an amazing person, Ruth was. And so they moved back. And Ruth exhibits some amazing things that the whole everybody around her saw. I would say there's a lot of people in our church who are single, men or women, that exhibit the kind of things that you're looking for in a spouse. She was loyal to her mother-in-law, it says. That declaration, I'm not going to leave you, I'm staying with you. Now you're talking about, I'm guessing, somebody who was the same age as her kids, so much younger than her, and her much older. Caring for her may have been more than just living in the same household. It may have been a little bit of nursing care at times. But Ruth did not give up, and she did that. She was loyal. A second thing she did, she trusted in God. We see that in chapter 1. Let me look at these, because I just... Ruth, we could probably... make a wonderful study here at some point. Chapter 1, verses 16 to 18. But Ruth said, do not urge me to leave you or return from following you. For where you go, I will go. Where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people and your God my God. And we knew that one already. That shows her loyalty. But then in verse... where she said she trusted God, that was in verse 16 that we just read. And then in chapter 2, verse 12. The Lord repay you for what you have done, and a full reward be given you by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. That was Boaz talking to her. But he recognized she had taken refuge under the wings of God. If you ever feel alone, we're under the wings of God too. Both married and non-married. But more so, maybe the single person at times may need that recognition to feel that they're under the wings of God. She worked hard to provide for herself and Naomi. It mentions in three different verses her working morning to night, gleaning the fields. Well, that was backbreaking work. They had a regular crew that was harvesting everything. There was a crew of guys that were using the sickle to cut it down. And behind them came a crew of women servants, maid servants, who would tie it up into big sheaves of grain. And she could take anything that got left behind in the field that wasn't wrapped up, which was enough for her to live on. So she was a hard worker, but it wasn't free. She had to work at it, and she did good with that. She had a good attitude is my fourth thing. And I found two verses on that that I feel like really speak to her good attitude. She did all that her mother-in-law told her to do. That's in chapter 3, verse 5. And if any of you ever had a mother-in-law, you may know that sometimes that's hard to do. But she did it, and that showed a lot of love, and showed her good attitude of wanting to please her mother-in-law. She bowed in humility before Boaz, and for the day and time, he was a little older man, older than her, and he was the landowner. And so she had bowed before him and said, thank you for watching over me. I know I'm just a foreigner to you. And she showed a great amount of humility in doing that. And humility that you probably don't see very much of nowadays. Number 5, she was a woman of excellence. I believe the NASB says that. ESV says she was a worthy woman. We look to Proverbs 3:10 talks about the excellent wife. And of course, she wasn't a wife yet. But guess what? She was exhibiting those excellent things that if God was bringing her a husband, the husband would recognize and would understand that she'd make a wonderful wife. Ruth trusted, number 6, Ruth trusted in the sovereignty of God to bring her and Boaz together. It had gotten very close at that time in verses chapter 2, verse 20. And Boaz had all these things to do, going to the gate and seeking out the first kinsman redeemer. And I'm sure she left after meeting with him and wondering, well, I wonder what's going to happen, you know. But she trusted the sovereignty of God. She didn't push Boaz. She allowed it to happen as God let it happen. Now, this is an excellent story of Ruth. I didn't do it, but we could probably turn that around and look at Boaz from his side of the story. He had a lot of wonderful things going on, including the fact that he was a man of some wealth. But yet he too must have been looking for a wife. And so he found a wife in that setup. Until the right person is found, our energy should be redirected in a way to keep our minds off the temptations. Spiritual service at your church, with others. Physical activity, it's always good to wear yourself out. Not only does it make you more healthy, but help reduce some of those temptations. Don't listen to, look at, or be around anything that increases temptation. Men and women, the place to look for a spouse is not the bar. People are drinking. They don't have their best sense on. They're less inhibited, and that's not a good place to look. Don't even go there. I'd love to see you meet somebody at church here, but I know there's a lot more places than here. My nephew, he met his wife at, I believe it was Kroger years ago. She was a cashier. And guess what? When he went through the line, he always made sure he was in her line. And so who knows? But he looked a long time. Learn Philippians 4:8. You know, if you're ever doing biblical counseling, you can say that for almost anything that somebody comes to you for. It's always one of those verses. Get your mind thinking about the right things. Finally, brothers, whatever's true, whatever's honorable, whatever's just, whatever's pure, whatever's lovely, whatever's commendable, if there is any excellence, if there is anything worthy of praise, think about these things. And we need to do that to keep our minds off of unrighteous thoughts. Number four here, realize that God gives us the right person. He will provide the strength to resist temptation until that right person comes. We, again, more scripture, 1 Corinthians 10, verse 13. No temptation has overtaken you that is not common to man. We all have those temptations, so don't feel like you're the only one. That's when it's good to go to somebody else and talk through it. It might help you out. God is faithful. He will not let you be tempted beyond your ability. But with the temptation, He will also provide the way of escape that you may be able to endure it. Number five, we should give thanks to the Lord for our situation. It is a gift, after all. Married or non-married, it's a gift. And be content in it, not desperate or anxious, only trusting that all things work together for good for Christians, whether single or married. Now that's basically Romans 8:28 adopted to our situation, where we're thinking, I can't go another day without being married. Guess what? He's making all things work together for good for you. You can go another day. If you're a person who likes to read lists of stuff, I got more that I can't even share. But my last list, and maybe our praise band can start finding their way up here. My last list, and I would love to hear more of these out of the Bible that you can think of. Examples of faithful singles. This one surprised me. Isaac, he was unmarried until 40 years old. And of course, his father was Sarah's mother, or his mother Sarah and his father Abraham. So we know he didn't get too out of line. And he was faithful in being unmarried till he's 40 years old. You know what I learned in that too? Look up his story. And soon after that, you'll see that Abraham got married again at like, I don't know, he lived to 175. But he got married again after Sarah had died. And had six more sons. Wow, I didn't know that story, did you? Who knew that story? Hey, a few of them you do. Good. You're better than I am at this. Isaac, unmarried till 40. Anna. And you just got to read Anna because it's heartwarming to me. Let's see, she is in Luke chapter 2, verses 36 to 38. And there was a prophetess, Anna, the daughter of Phanuel of the tribe of Asher. She was advanced in years, having lived with her husband 7 years from when she was a virgin, and then as a widow until she was 84. She did not depart from the temple, worshiping with fasting and prayer night and day. And coming up at that very hour, she began to give thanks to God and to speak of Him to all who were waiting for the redemption of Jerusalem. So, she was a virgin. Say if she maybe even was 20 years old and then married for 7 years and her husband died. And all that time till she was 84. Talk about somebody staying busy by doing spiritual things. She was working at the temple till she was 84 years old, and she was allowed to prophesy about Jesus when he came to the temple. Paul, we mentioned he'd been a widower, and he remained faithful to the Lord. I do not want to go through his regimen of whippings and beatings with rods and being thrown in prison. But he remained faithful through all that. And that's an amazing thing. Guess who? I bet maybe I'd like somebody who's a single to guess our biggest and best example. Jesus, somebody said. Who said it? All right, Christina said Jesus. He did it, didn't he? He lasted his whole life. And boy, if there was a guy who could have used somebody to take care of him, to rub his shoulders when he came home at night, he would have been that guy. But being the perfect Savior, he chose not to even get married. And live that perfect life without sin. And then the last one, she is not a great example. I will call her an example of the real world of today. The woman at the well. Remember her? God bless her. Jesus asked her to get him some water. And then he ends up telling her about living water. And eventually, Jesus says, you've had 5 husbands, and you're not married to the guy you're living with now. I hope Jesus doesn't have to come to you someday, and you're in that situation. But on the reverse of that, I have some hope for you. Guess what? He forgave her. She went out and testified to the whole town. He told me everything I ever did. And guess what? The town probably already knew. But she said, is this guy the Messiah? It's never too late to turn a life around. I hope you're all living a perfect life without anything involving sexual immoralities. But that'd be pretty stupid of me to think that, wouldn't it? We know that we live in the same world as the rest of Indianapolis. And there's a lot of temptation. There's a lot of things that could go wrong. And I just call you today to come to be right with the Lord, that you can start over with a new and fresh life. Yes, there may be some hangovers from the things you've done in the past that you might have to deal with. But with the Lord and with His church, you are going to be right again. And I pray that for you. Let's finish in prayer.